And I love this passage, particularly verse 10 that I've just put in red there on the screen. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it to the full. It's a verse that I remember just really striking me as a student, that I was sort of going through a phase of feeling that Christianity was in some sense sort of a bit dour and joyless. And I came across this verse and I just suddenly realized that actually Jesus was offering me everything I longed for. He was offering me abundant life, life to the full. And I began to sort of wake up and look around and see that actually some of the Christians I know did have joy in life. And in fact, many of them, that was their characteristic. I realized that Jesus was offering me exactly what I wanted, life abundantly. And I guess that's what all of us at some level are pursuing at the moment. But I guess where the tension comes in is that it doesn't always feel as if we've got life abundant from Jesus. I mean, certainly the moment, as we're all either facing lockdown or busy away in hospitals and places, it's life feels pretty harsh at the moment, not abundant. And even when we're not sort of caught up in a coronavirus, I think often the Christian faith can feel quite lonely. You know, we live in a culture that has largely moved away from the Christian faith. People would describe themselves as atheists, and to profess some kind of faith in this culture, people at best will think it's a bit weird. At worst, they might look down on us. It can be lonely to stand for faith in the current environment. It can be hard work as well. Just we look at our own hearts. You know, there's so much sort of grot and sin and ugliness in our hearts, and as we try and live for God, that can be quite a lonely experience as well. But what sort of struck me as I was looking at these verses this week is that they're really written into that exact context of loneliness. Way a few months back, we looked at John chapter 9, and the context for these verses is that Jesus has healed a man born blind. Now, he healed him on the Sabbath, so the Jewish leaders rejected Jesus. But the man who was born blind, he had a great loyalty to Jesus. He stuck by him. And what you saw was he was sticking with Jesus at the same time that the Pharisees were rejecting him. And where he ends up is the Pharisees kick him out of the synagogue. So here is this man, he's following Jesus, and he doesn't look like he's getting an abundant life at all. He looks like quite a lonely figure. And so I guess one of the questions these verses speak into is that question of when the Christian faith feels lonely and hard, and it doesn't feel like life abundant, what does Jesus say? More to the point, how would we ever convince anyone else to join us in that loneliness? And really, I think what Jesus says to the blind man and to us is that he's the good shepherd, and we should trust him to work out his good purposes. I just wanted to divide the passage into three sections. In the first, I think Jesus would say, trust the call of the good shepherd. So this is verse 1. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs in another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. So the background here is that in the ancient world, overnight shepherds would keep their sheep in a sort of pen like this, and there might be sort of three or four flocks that were held in the same pen. And in the morning, the shepherd would come and he would call his sheep. He would have a distinctive voice that would call them out, and his sheep would hear that voice and they would come out. But of course, the shepherd was not the only one. He wanted to get his hands on the sheep. There would also be robbers who'd want to get in there and to steal the sheep. And they can't stand at the door. They've got to go in and break in some other way. A bit like if you head upstairs now and see someone smashing through your window and the foot coming through, you would assume it's not the postman, right? He rings at the doorbell. That'll be someone breaking in. Well, so what Jesus is doing right at the very beginning of this chapter is setting up a contrast that will run all the way through. The exact metaphor changes slightly, but all the way through there's this contrast of the good shepherd and the robber. In other words, as Jesus calls us to trust the call of the good shepherd, he recognizes that we'll have many other voices that are calling us to listen to them. And we're always having to decide, who are we going to follow? How are we going to make that decision? A bit like one of those Zoom conference calls where someone asks a question and suddenly everyone starts speaking at the same time and everyone's face is pinging up on the screen. You've got to work out who to listen to. So we live in an environment where there's all these voices coming at us all the time. Who are we going to listen to? Maybe it's that productivity guru or the YouTube channel influencer who's giving us life hacks that will lead us into the perfect management of our time. Maybe it's some advertiser selling us a kitchen that is somehow not only going to transform our dishes, but transform our family life. Maybe it's that individual and we just think if only we were in a romantic relationship with them, well then we could go and take on the world. And what Jesus wants to do is to warn us from putting too much store by these voices. So right at the very beginning, verse 1, he says, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. In some senses, it would be natural for Jesus to start by talking about the shepherd. But actually, he starts with the robber, because I think there's quite a strong note of warning running through this passage. The robber would steal our joy, just as Jesus offers it to us. And so Jesus says, don't follow their call. Trust the call of the good shepherd. And I guess the problem with thieves and robbers is that none of us think we're going to fall for it, right? You think about internet scams. We know they're out there. We all think we're too bright to tumble into it, yeah? But robbers, they're compelling. They're deceiving. And I think that is particularly the case when they're in leadership. And that was what was going on back in John chapter 9. So the Pharisees that are pushing this blind man who trusts in Jesus out of the synagogue, they are upright, they are religious, they are people of principle, but more than that, they are the leadership of God's people. They represent the establishment. And now Jesus says, actually, they're robbers. There's quite a strong echo in this passage of Ezekiel 34, where hundreds of years before, Ezekiel had exactly the same position. The religious establishment of his day were leading God's people away from God and therefore into destruction and not caring for them and loving them as they should. So the blind man finds himself in this uncomfortable position of being quite lonely as he opposes the people in authority. And in the midst of that, Jesus says, look, keep going, trust the call of the good shepherd. You sometimes see those experiments, don't you, when they get a bunch of teenagers together, like 10 teenagers, and they give them a really simple maths question to solve, and they get 9 of them to give the wrong answer. And the other guy's not in on the loop. And they go around the first 9 and they all give the wrong answer. And you can see the last bloke looking more and more confused. Is he going to give the right answer or not? And more often than not, he doesn't, because he just doesn't want to stand out against the crowd. It's lonely. Well, so it can be lonely to stand out for Jesus, particularly when that means taking on leadership. In a religious context, that might be, I don't know, a church pastor who is winsome and forceful and funny and respected. And if their voice drifts from that of Jesus, well, maybe we'll be slow to pick it up because we just assume they won't. Maybe if we do pick it up and begin to raise questions, people will say, oh, look, don't make a fuss. Don't kick up a fuss about this. It's a bit unnecessary. It's also lonely, I think, to stand against the establishment. Now, we live in an environment where, in many ways, the establishment is no longer the religious establishment. But people in our society have pretty strong sense of what is right and wrong. I think you've seen that through this whole virus thing, haven't you? Thursday night, we all stand out and applaud the NHS because we have a strong sense that that is right. So whilst we don't live in a religious society explicitly, we do live in a society with a pretty strong sense of values. A lot of those values inherit from the Christian faith. And so where the values of society drift away from Jesus, well, it'll be hard to spot it, and it'll be lonely to stand against it. Well, the Bible tells us that Jesus really is unique and the only way to God. It'll be lonely to hold that position in our current society. Well, the Bible tells us that its view of morality is the right view to follow. That'll be hard in a society that just says live and let live. So in the midst of this loneliness that we may feel alongside the blind man, Jesus is saying, trust the call of the good shepherd. And the questions this is going to raise is well, how am I right? And why would anyone join me? And that's the reassurance, I think, of verse 3. To the good shepherd, the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name. He leads them out. And when he's brought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him. They know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they'll flee from him. So even amidst this loneliness, people will believe. They'll follow the call of Jesus because they'll recognize something in his voice. explains why the Pharisees seem to miss what's going on. I think it explains why the blind man has the strength to stand up against the establishment. I think it explains why the Christian faith grew in the early years amid such opposition. Because God's people hear God's voice and they follow him. When I was a kid, we had a golden retriever, particularly Din dog, as I remember. And we used to do these dog training classes. It was painful. And at the end, all the dogs would line up against the wall and you had to walk away from your dog saying, stay, stay, and see how far you could walk before the dog gave up and ran towards you. But the dog always ran to its own owner. That's what a dog does. It pursues its owner. And so God's people will chase after God. And if we're struggling to keep going, if we feel lonely, if we feel that it's hard to keep going as a Christian, well, Jesus would say, keep listening to his voice, keep running to him. If we look at our friends and colleagues and think, well, how would any of them ever come to trust in Jesus? We don't need to manipulate Jesus or be a kind of PR agent for him. Because the promise is clear, God will call people to himself through Jesus' voice. So Jesus says, trust the call of the good shepherd. He will work out his good purposes. But is it really worth it? Well, I think the second thing we see here is the call to trust the promises of the good shepherd. So this is back to verse 10. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. Trust the promises of the good shepherd. And now what Jesus does is he pictures himself as a door or a gate. So verse 7, Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't listen to them. I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he'll be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. So the image here is of Jesus as a gate. And the sheep are sort of trapped in that pen overnight. But as the gate is open, they come out of the cramped pen, away from the parched grass, into the fresh air, the fresh grass, under the protection of the shepherd as he leads them out and cares for them. Well, if you want to update the image, we might perhaps think of a family who are political refugees. Perhaps they're in I don't know, somewhere like Syria. Islamic State is approaching. They're going to get persecuted for their religion. They get to the one airport that is still open. They go through the departure gate. They're allowed through and onto the plane, and now opens before them freedom, security, a chance to rebuild and to prosper. Well, Jesus is saying, here's that gate. A gate to what? Well, to life. But particularly in verse 9, life that is being saved and going in and out and finding pasture. That is to say, security and plenty. So when Jesus promises eternal life, it's not so simply that we live forever. It could be a bit boring. It's that we have security, the security of being taken out of this world with all the death and disease and the sin that spoils it. The abundance of living with all of God's blessings, of being nourished by God's love. You know, what is promised here is security and plenty. And that is a real wonderful promise. If at the moment life feels harsh and parched and scary, and it comes through Jesus, him alone. He is the gate. It's a big claim. But if it is true, it is a wonderful claim. So Jesus is saying, trust the promises of the good shepherd, life in abundance. But what we see again is this contrast that runs all the way through the passage. So verse 10, the thief, by contrast, comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. So the robber, well, he doesn't care about the sheep at all. He's not trying to lead them into security and abundance. He's just there to tear away what's not his. So the shepherd finds himself the next morning looking at his pen in a big space where there should be a sheep. A few months ago, I went out for supper and I came back to find my bike at the end of the evening. And this is what I found, just a broken, sawn through lock and an empty bike rack. And it's kind of a sickening feeling. Well, that is the feeling that the thief and the robber leaves behind. The thief comes only to kill and steal and destroy. So think about all the great promises of communism and then what actually happened in the Soviet era. They confiscated property, they killed human life, they savaged everything that was valuable. Think about our society today. We're promised progress. What do? Well, we no platform those that we don't agree with. At a time when abortion legislation is being rushed through Parliament to allow home abortions in lockdown. I know the whole abortion issue is very complicated and painful, and there are medical issues involved, but we can ask, what value does our society place on life? What about social media? It promises such a wonderful way to connect with people. It steals respect. It destroys reputation. I think it does kill people. Think of family life. A woman who is married and she meets some other man and she decides that he will give him fulfillment. And so with tears in her eyes, she leaves her home to set up with him. Children confused, husband angry. And before long, the disillusionment sets in. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I wonder what promises of a thief we might be listening to today. Maybe it's at work, that promise of a promotion that would give us status and influence. And actually, when we get the job, it just steals our time. It destroys our joy. It kills our home life. I think we're of an age where the question we're always asking of anything is, does it work for me? Does the Christian faith work for me? But we need some kind of self-awareness about that question. How do we define working? What time horizon? That was my issue when I was a student. I was only interested in the here and now. Or will we look longer out to eternity? Will we allow that something working for me may include some effort, some element of suffering, that actually all good things come at a cost? Does things working for me include some sense of the noble rather than just the indulgent? In other words, which voice are we listening to and how are we making that decision? I think often we like to think, well, it doesn't really matter to listen to a whole load of different voices, put together your own worldview. But what Jesus is saying here is actually it does matter who you listen to. It's a real question, I think, for us, whether we're Christian or not. How do we decide what we mean by what works for us? Jesus would say, trust the promises of the Good Shepherd. He will work out his good purposes. But how do we know that we can trust him? Well, thirdly and finally, trust the motives of the Good Shepherd. And this is verse 11. Jesus says, I'm the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. The wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. So again, we've got this contrast. Jesus, the Good Shepherd, where he willingly lays down his life for the sheep. You can see that willingness in verse 18. No one takes it from me. He's committed to the sheep, even to the point of death. So we can trust his motives. The contrast, the hired hand, where he runs away. So there he is looking after the sheep. And he sees a wolf and the undergrowth, the green eyes flickering, the teeth. He picks up his whip to chase it away, his hand sweaty. And then he hears the howl and the grinding of the teeth. His grip loosens slightly on the whip. Is it really worth it? It's just a sheep. It's not even mine. And frankly, my boss can afford another one. And as the wolf springs forward, he springs up and runs away. The drug dealer who doesn't care for his client when he's got no money. The friend who makes a pathetic excuse as to why they can't help today. The colleagues who were so close to us, but as soon as there was talk of redundancies, well, suddenly it's every man for himself. We can all think of people who have let us down. But not Jesus. He lays down his life for the sheep. You ever seen this film, In the Line of Fire? Came out in the 90s, I think. Clint Eastwood, he plays this bodyguard for the president who was there when JFK was shot. And there's this person who keeps saying to him, you could have taken the bullet if you wanted to. You could have dived in front of it. At that last minute, you chose not to. You ducked out. Well, when Jesus died on the cross, he took the bullet. He paid for all of our wrongdoing, all of our sin, that we might enter eternal life completely forgiven. And that means he's utterly trustworthy. He promises abundance and he will not let us down. Because look at what it cost him. And so we're drawn into the love that Jesus has for God and that God has for us. That blind man stands lonely, cast out of the synagogue, and yet in Jesus alongside him, he has the most loyal friend, the most wonderful shepherd we could hope to have. And the question we're really left with is one of response, and you can see it in the people. Verse 19, there was division among the Jews. Many said, he's got a demon, he's insane, why listen to him? Others said, these are not the words of a man who's oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? They don't, any of them, question the scale of what Jesus is claiming. They don't question the miracle. The question is, how are they going to respond? what voice is it that they're listening? And that, I think, is the question that comes down to us this lunchtime. Will we trust the Good Shepherd to work out his good purposes? That feels like enough for me. I guess just a couple of questions that it might be worth leaving us with. When do we feel that sense of loneliness when we're standing for our faith, what we believe in? Who do we think is the equivalent of the robbers or the hired hand today? And how do these verses help us when we feel that sense of loneliness in our life or in our faith?